Okay, great. Well, we, in the first couple of sessions of the PLC, we started to lay the groundwork for what will eventually lead up to a new round of Environmental Workforce Development Job Training grants. The RFP will probably come out in June. We really have three audiences on the PLC. We've got people who are brand new to this whole area of environmental job training. Some of them are interested in developing a grant and submitting a proposal for federal funding. Then we've got people who may have submitted a grant in the past or recently and weren't able to get funding. And then we've got people who are really well experienced, and they are our mentors, and they can give us some good insights into what they've done, what works for them, and some hints and tips that they find that maybe they've tried and it just hasn't worked, or some things that have really worked for them. So we have these three groups, and we try to discuss everything in a way that it might help each of these groups. We, as I said before, for anyone that just came on, we keep open mics so you could ask questions. These are very informal sessions, and we try to talk about topics. We'll have some of the grantees speak on certain topics later. Because we're preparing for this new RFP comes out, we're going to be focusing on some coaching and how we may want to address these seven ranking criteria that they'll judge your proposal on. Well, we always start out with news from Washington, which is to find out what's happening and where we're at and what EPA is at this point. So, Heather, you have some news from either Washington or HMTRI?
We've got some exciting news from HMTRI. You know, from the Washington side, you guys know we've already indicated before that we're looking at an early summer idea for the recently next RFP. So you guys are attending the PLC. That's what you need to do. And there's a lot of things that you can start doing in advance to prepare yourself for the release of that RFP, that request for proposal. So you guys are doing a great job right now getting, getting things rolling. And I do want to remind you guys, too, we have fantastic resources on our website, brownfields-toolbox.org. So if you are looking at getting started on this process, if you are an experienced one, but you want to go and check out our best practices of the stuff that we compiled, those eight critical components of successful programs, definitely check out the website. We've got some great resources out there to help you along the way. On the HMTRI side of things, thank you very much for those who participated in the Certified Employee Finder. We are very excited to say that that is actually up on the toolbox as well. And that's a really great resource that kind of lets you see what the other programs are doing out there. So if there's any employers that are looking for trained technicians in your area, you know, we've got that document that's out there showing how many folks that you're going to have graduating and what type of skills and certs they're going to have. So really, really great resource. So thank you very much for those who participated in that. And the social media scan will be coming up as well, so we'll get that information out there too. But the big thing we wanted to share with you guys, and I know we talked about it last week as well, but we are officially have our date selected for the annual all-grantee meeting. It is August 12th through the 13th in Alexandria, Virginia. Now, for those of you, if this is your first time jumping into the phone call, we do want to share with you what that's a little bit about. This is a fantastic two-day event where we really dive in depth into what is environmental workforce development and job training. So we'll have lots of sessions where you can explore topics that are really relevant to your program and led by other grantees. You know, we actually, you guys are the greatest experts, so we pull from the folks that are in this program and live this program to help us lead these sessions to share that information. We'll also have EPA staff there as well from HQ, as well as regional coordinators were available. So it'll be a nice time to meet face-to-face to some of these people that you might have seen in emails before, or have a unique moment to really get together and chat with them. So it's a really just a fantastic event. And now this is something that is available to current grantees, prospective grantees, so if you're brand new and thinking about starting a program, this would be for you. Alumni, so grantees maybe that have finished their cycle with the EWGJT program at the EPA, as well as PLC members. So we really would like you guys to come on out and visit with us. HMTRI does cover the lodging costs associated with the meeting, so we will cover the Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night. So that's assuming that you guys are going to travel on August 11th and August 14th. So we will cover the hotel nights that are associated with this all grantee meeting. And then we also feed you while you're there. You'll get breakfast and lunch. We do working meals. So that way you really only have to be looking at, evening costs on your own as well as transportation costs. So we really try to find ways to help, keep this as affordable as possible going forward. We will be at the Holiday Inn and Suites in Old Town Alexandria. So we're really excited about that. We are just about, hopefully today we'll be done with the talking with the hotel part of it. As soon as I sign that piece of paperwork, we're going to send the invite ready out to you guys. So please be looking for that at the end of the week. We'll send it out on the listserv as well as through the PLC listserv. So if you do not already receive emails from me and or Mike, please feel free to send me an email. We'll get you on our listserv, and that way we can make sure that you see these resources as they become available. You can email me at hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. All right, Mike, I'll hand it back over to you.
We will be sending you some information on things you might want to discuss at the All Grantee meeting. We try to make it a participatory and networking workshop. So we send out to the EPA regional coordinators, and we send out to the grantees that, again, on these lists. If you're not on the PLC list, send your contact information to Heather. The objective is to try to cover ideas and information and questions that people might have, because headquarters staff will be there as well as all the regional coordinators. So it's a great time for people who are thinking of starting a program to get some honest answers. And if you're remotely interested, it's a good time to decide this is we want to do this, or we're just not ready yet. So it's a great time to do that. We usually like to answer questions from the people, from PLC members, and of course we've talked about when the RFP is in. We often will repeat some of the things in the newsletter or the post-session notes about schedules. We try to keep that up to date because they're changing, and we only have the best information we can get from EPA, and some of the things are still not locked in concrete in EPA, so a lot will depend on budgets and funding and their schedules. But the main questions, I think, that are in addition, we put up a schedule that may or may not change. It's our opinion of the way things might look. We did that on the last notes. One of the questions that arose from that is the typical questions. When is it going to come out? How much of the grant's going to be? How many of them are going to be there? And it's our best expectations they're going to pretty much be followed fairly close to the FY20 RFPs, and did in the last one. We'll put links to those RFPs, the notes, and the slides that EPA provided to last year's applicants. Those of you who are new to the program can just click on those and get an idea of what this year's will look. It'll look real close. These grants are $200,000 for 3 years. Basically, that first year, per our schedule, it would be about a year from now when you'd start your courses. That first year is a matter of organizing, getting your curriculum together, doing all of the things that you proposed in your proposal, getting your first cohorts going about now, and then that will continue through that entire first year and into the second year. That third year is a wind-up year to place your hanging graduates who may not have gotten a job to tie things up. Hopefully in that third year or before that third year, you'll perhaps receive additional funding from EPA, or you'll receive funding from other organizations, whether it's a city, county, or some other federal organization to sustain your program, which is one of the goals of this program to begin with. So how many would be the question, and what kind of competition am I going to have? Well, this is varied. In FY20, which is a kind of a special grant, they didn't think they would be having one this year, so they really pushed, and there were actually 26 awards made in FY20 last November. The year in FY18, they skipped 19. In 18, they awarded 17 grants, in 17, 14 grants, and in 16, about 18 grants. So you've got a range here of somewhere between 14, being very optimistic, 26. It probably won't be that high. It all depends on the programs and how committed they are to environmental justice and supporting the training program. Whatever those budgets look like, if it's a very slim year, it might be on the lower side. If it's people looking to support this program, we may be on that high side. I think the positive note that we need to comment on is one of the provisions that will probably most likely be in this year's budget will be that if you got an award last November, FY20, you wouldn't be eligible to get additional funds in the 21, this one that will come out, RFP comes out in June. That means that I don't want to use the term the competition will be less, but there will be, since there were 26, a large number of applicants granted awards in 20. Those of you who may have just missed out by a point or two, and I know there's many, several of us that we just missed by a point or just 2 points, your chances, if you expand your program and do a little extra work on that, your chances are really good this year. So keep plugging, and hopefully during the series of professional learning communities, we might be able to give you some ideas that might just give you enough to enhance your proposal and get you over that threshold mark. It's graded on the curve, so if they have $3 million, it's 15 grants, and it's the best 15 proposals. And how do you grade a proposal? Well, unfortunately, they can't come to your program. They don't know you. If they know you, they probably will have to recuse themselves of evaluating your grant. So it's what you have written in your grant is how they know you. So they know you by what you write, and that's really important. And, of course, we don't evaluate grants. We can't tell you how to write your grant, but what we can do is together as a group, we can throw out some ideas and tips and things you might want to consider when you do write your grant that may be things that other people have not thought about. And we've got a pretty good track record. In almost every cycle, most of the people that attend the PLCs are awarded grants, or most of them who are awarded grants have been PLC members. So we're, as a group, those of you who are successful and those of you who have made mistakes, we can discuss these things and give you some really good ideas that you may want to do in expanding that grant. We always do shout-outs. We like to shout-out to the grantees who have done something special between calls. And I would like to go back and shout-out to the Employee Finder. Employee Finder is really a bad name, and we're discussing what can we call it, or maybe we have to call it two different things. It's really a synopsis or a summary of active grantees. And what it's got is, and Bruce Diamond did this survey, and you may be hearing from him again. We try to keep it as updated as we can. You know, we got close to 50 programs. He's got 42 active grants in there. I think some of the information is really helpful. One is just the contact information of who you can call if you have a question as you go through it. And again, it's easy to miss because it's on Brownfield's toolbox, but you have to go to find employees. It doesn't stick out of program, active programs, which might be a better name. But you could go in there and you can check out all of the active programs, or all but a few that we haven't been able to get responses from. You could find out who's doing it. You could find out what their projected estimated graduation dates are, what kind of certifications they're providing in their curriculum, whether they've got life skills, any special information. So it's neat to go through there. It was really designed, and we use it to give to national employers, and we use it at the Brownfields Conference. Say we ask employers that come by the booth, and, well, what state are you looking for employers? They may say, well, Ohio, and we can go to Ohio and find out what active grantees are there, or if they're national, we can give them the access to the entire document. And if they need some people with HAZWOPER or confined space or whatever, they can go through that and they could identify the program, and then they could call the contact information on it. So it's used as a placement aid, but I think it's just as valuable for someone who's starting a program that may want to say, we got a lot of people who are asking what kind of curriculums, and we're going to talk about this later in the PLC, a whole session on curriculum. And it's really not dependent on what other people are doing because there's no one standard curriculum. But you can get an idea of what some of the other grantees are involving in their core curriculum. So I want to shout out to Bruce from HMTRI for the great job he's doing on it. And I want to shout out to all the grantees that responded to it, because any scan like that is no better than the responses we get from it. If you go into that scan and find some incorrect information, email Bruce to correct it, and we'll have his email address in there, and he'll make sure he keeps that document updated. I'd like to also, and I mentioned it briefly in the last PLC, shout out to Santa Fe Community Colleges. Is Santa Fe on the line today? I'm not sure, Janet. Santa Fe has been a program that's been evolving over quite a few years. They were a grantee, not a grantee. They've worked with our sister program at NIHS, and they're in Los Alamos. It's a difficult grant because rural areas are tough, and when you're and their target audience is a difficult target group to work with. But they, and this is going to segue into today's discussion, they bounced around for different employers, and they latched on and came across the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Well, of course, when they first started, Los Alamos was interested in PhDs, certainly engineers of all types and scientists, but they kept that line of communications open, and Los Alamos decided they were going to start a program for underserved people and people that that could be trained pretty much exactly what the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program is all about. And the grantee, the Environmental Workforce grantee, worked with them and started to provide them with graduates. They've found this is very successful. Not only is it successful, it turns out that Janet emailed me a letter that the lab has actually copied their program, that they're impressed by it, and they're actually copying the Environmental Workforce Program, not to put them out of business, but they're using it in a different context. What they liked about this program is different than a lot of job training programs. The thing about New Mexico is when you have a federal lab, all the universities are jumping on the bandwagon trying to get federal funds. They're all looking for PhDs and engineers and high-tech workers. They don't, when you go into those universities, you go into lecture halls, you listen to lecture, you go home, you might have breakout sessions, but you're not getting the entire curriculum and the entire networking of your program. And the thing that they liked about the Environmental Workforce Program is this entire program where you're taking interest in your students and you're bringing them along the way. So when they graduate, they've got a system or component of many courses that include the life skills and their peripheral courses you might need to go into an occupation. And they really like that about it, and they're actually working backwards with Santa Fe to see what they're doing so they can incorporate into some of the other Los Alamos programs. Well, we want to start now in this third PLC to focus on the RFP and some of the ways they might be evaluating these grants. And of course, the last PLC we talked about job titles, and then this month we do a bi-monthly Connect newsletter. You'll be getting something related to that, is where do job training grantees go to work. So we started off with job titles, and I think what comes out of that is there are no specific job titles. Environmental technician is such a generous, that's like surgeon or doctor or whatever. It's so generous, general, that it's almost not usable, but it's when you go into large organizations, you have to call someone something, and then that position description. Department of Labor, of course, as you saw in last week's notes, has gone to incredible detail to make this as fine-tuned as they can to describe every job, what they do, how much they make, what the demand is for it. They've gone to the minutia, but it still doesn't fit some of the graduates that we have coming out of our programs and how they might go to work. And as we discussed in the last PLC, not a bad idea is go to any employer and look at the types of jobs that they need to fill and what types of skills and knowledges do they need. And somewhere in that list of skills and knowledges would be or could very well be some of the components that are part of the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program. You don't have to put someone in a job that's titled environmental technician or hazardous waste technician. If he is working for UPS and he's labeling hazardous materials or spill response, or he's working for a deconstruction firm and he's certified in asbestos or lead paint, or perhaps has had an RRP certification, that's there. He's there, and you've got a great placement. So the purpose of last week's PLC is don't get hung up over job titles. Now what we want to do is move into this whole area of labor needs assessment. There's two types of needs assessment. There's the community needs assessment, which is really important. We're going to do that next time. And there's labor market assessment. And the reason we're jumping into labor market first is labor market assessment is the base for this entire program. And also community assessment is somewhat linked to after you're doing your labor market assessment. It's an environmental workforce development and job strength program. As I mentioned in this Connect newsletter, which you'll see later next week, this should really be called an environmental justice job training program. We have to keep in mind two things. We have to look at the community that we're trying to assist and why we even exist. It's an environmental justice program, and it was spawned out of that program, and it's justified to be in EPA because EPA is committed to environmental justice, one, and of course it's very specific to it, and it was also mentioned in CERCLA in the original hazardous waste legislation, gave EPA the not the appropriation, but the authority to do training. It still has to get the appropriations from EPA, but the authority is there, and EPA is committed to environmental justice. And hopefully different program offices in EPA are committed to environmental justice, and this is a way to help communities benefit from brownfields, environmental restoration in their community. What we have to do, and again, we'll talk about that later, but we have to, before we get too far, is there a need in my community? We have to do a labor market assessment of some sort. The more depth, the better. And of course, in the RFP that comes out, will be coming out, they're going to talk about an award about 10 points for a labor market assessment. 10 points is a lot. It could make you someone who'll get awarded a grant or not. And it's easy when you look at that to not think it's a big deal, but it's an incredibly big deal. They want to know, they talk about what's the depth of your analysis, what methods did you use, how did you link your target community to your labor market assessment, how did it affect your curriculum, and what did you do in your curriculum. And I think you may be beginning to see why this is so important. And it's easy to try to use numbers and do this from your office, but you can't. The deeper you go and the more into the weeds you get, the better your labor market assessment will be. And I'll tell you why. Your labor market assessment can help you with a whole lot of other things we're going to be talking about in the next month or two. It's going to help you certainly develop employer partners. It's going to help you with your graduate placement. Before you even write your proposal, it's going to help you with your placement. It's going to help you form advisory committees. It's going to give you an idea of how you should be writing curriculum. And finally, it's going to show you maybe where you need to target your training and where your target community is going to be. If you have a very large facility, a painting facility or a tank manufacturer or a Superfund site that's in a portion of the city or county, you may not want to locate your training on the other side of town where you can't get there easy. It's going to influence your target community on the types of people that they want to employ or can't employ. If it's a facility where they just can't, by regular statute or whatever, they can't employ the people that you're training, why go there? Why train, assume your program is, it's not we will train and they will hire. It's they will hire and we will train to their requirements. So here's where we do this labor market assessment. And what we're trying to do is establish an employer database. And how do we do that? And we're going to, in the session notes, we'll talk about some tools that EPA has, Cleanup in My Community, and it's an EJ tool, and we'll give you links to those. Those are very detailed tools that will guide you to maps of where the Superfund sites are, where the brownfield sites are. They'll give you an idea of where all the brownfields are. You can zero down to who's involved in cleaning up those sites. There, you can get lost in these tools very easy, but I want to mention they're there, and while you have the time, it might be good for you to go in there. But I want to talk about just the nuts and bolts, the more nitty-gritty boots-on-the-ground assessments and how you might go about doing that. And again, what you want to do is start establishing your employers, who is going to hire, your graduates. And this is way before you even decided even to do the program. Who are your major candidates? And we find that a lot of grantees may have a dozen of customers. You've got two customers. You've got the grantees who are your customers, or the participants who are your customers, and you've got your employers who, and they're equally important. You've got to, again, you've got to place all these things. And the time to start thinking about placement is not midway through your program. It's really before your program even starts. And is Rochester on the line? Rochester has been able to place a lot of the graduates before they even trained. And they have used techniques we'll talk about, in one of many. But clearly you want to find out who are the key players. And there's some that are major, and then there's a lot of them that are less major. They may not be hiring one a year or two or three, and there may be some that will take a lot in different areas. And I'm talking about, of course, when we talk about public utilities, City Hall. In last month's notes, I think we discussed a whole lot of areas, maybe 15 areas, where job titles exist, and people who are hiring are people, are graduates. They can be, utilities are really good hires. In fact, companies like PG&E out west, maybe not so much anymore, but they backstop. They might even provide office space for your program. They may provide training space for your program, which will influence where your target community is going to be or where your training facilities are. You need to try to make these contacts. And the reason we're mentioning this on the first coaching session is that it takes a long time to start developing this, and a continuous effort where you just have to start building this Rolodex, digital Rolodex, of people who are likely or may hire your graduates. Utilities, all kinds, water utilities, wastewater utilities, power utilities are great. These are large organizations that have massive amounts of employees. And among those massive amounts of employees are needs for people with, whether it's hazmat, spill response, confined space, any number of health and safety courses. Government, of course, outside of utilities, are hiring many of the graduates. There might be, whether they're municipal agencies, that might be police departments, or rescue squads. They might be any parts of, may be community organizations that will do it. Certainly scrap and recycling facilities, Recycle Force is a perfect example of recycling construction companies, manpower firms, local unions. You really need to search out your local unions, usually construction. There might be a health and safety or a painting union, and you need to contact them. The question you're going to ask me next is, well, that sounds good, but how do I do it? And like all answers to everything, ask Google. I mean, go to Google. I, just for the heck of it, I went to Google and I said, find me people who hire cleanup people, keep cleanup contractors. Got about 20 of them, and this is just in Raleigh. Then I just changed cleanup with hazardous materials, and I've got all kinds of spill response companies. Then I substituted the hazardous materials with recycling companies. Not only did I get a whole bunch of recycling companies, I ended up with an article of Raleigh now is going to be paying a company called Sunoco $1.5 million for recycling, primarily because China is not taking our recyclables anymore. Our recycled materials aren't worth what they used to be. Is Recycle Force on the line? Okay. Recycle Force has been right on the front lines of this. They do anything with a plug. We've had them on before. They will recycle, and they find it challenging, but they're doing well, and they're hiring ex-offenders. They're recycling anything with a plug. They're reselling. They're sending their recycles out they're breaking it down and selling out for raw materials, which is getting tougher and tougher because of commodity prices falling. And China, which was accepting most of our recyclables, aren't anymore. So there's tremendous opportunities. Just as we just mentioned, going into Google and starting to do some desk research without even leaving the office. And then once you find these companies, you're going to have to start calling them systematically, the ones that look the most promising. You might also look for help wanted. The problem with going to, and you can go to manpower firms, which I also did, and there's a lot of them. A lot of them will say they're looking for environmental technicians. You have to be careful with them because a lot of them are just looking for engineers or scientists. Those are a lot of the consulting firms, but a lot of them are looking for assistants. And it's amazing how many they might say, we're looking, again, it gets back to that job title issue. Environmental technician. Well, that doesn't mean a whole lot, but what is that technician going to be doing? He might be working with equipment for water sampling, or he might be assisting an engineer with some field measurements. So you really, when you go to the manpower firms, again, you got to get down into the weeds. In fact, all of these, you're going to have to get down in the weeds. And what do? You get a hold of the HR people, and you start asking them, are you hiring people that may have certain needs for environmental certifications? And if you get a positive response, or they may refer you to someone else, which is more likely, you want to start going deeper and deeper. Eventually, what you want to do is get a name. And again, this is the difference between those who are funded and those who are not funded. That it's going to take a lot of time and effort. But what you want to do is you want to get into the name. You need the contact information of the person who may be interested in your graduates. And again, I'll tell you why you need that. It's going to help you through the whole grant. It's going to help you when you start forming your advisory committee, which we'll talk about later. It may help you for guest instructors to come to your program and talk. It's certainly going to help you with your placement and all those things. If you have a contact name and someone you can call at some companies, you can go back to them you get closer. We're pretty distant from when the RFPs haven't come out yet. But when those RFPs come out, it's like you're going like a bat. And you will not have the time that you have now to start schmoozing around and seeing who you could call to get on your advisory committee, who's going to be a good advisory person. You're not going to be able to call who are going to be your strategic partners. You're going to be trying to write this grant. And if you do this work now, which does take time, you're going to have all this together. Now, the fact that it is far away and you're going to say, well, I'm not even sure I'm going to do this yet, or we're just so far away and I don't want to tell someone that I'm going to do this and I don't. Well, what you want to do is you want to always preface it as, we're thinking of developing an environmental job training program, and this is going to be our target group. Do you have special programs for underserved people? Might be one. What are the kinds of skills and knowledges they might need? Can I show you what are some of the ideas we're thinking of? And they might say, well, I'm interested, or no, we're not hiring anyone like that. We need marketing people or whatever. Okay, go on. But if they show an interest, then you keep digging deeper and you get their name and contact information. As we get closer to writing this proposal, now we want to call them back. Do we want to try to get them on our advisory committee? We want our advisory committees formed before we write our grant. And we'll be talking about this at a future date. You don't form your advisory committee after you're well into the grant. You want to get that into, you want to have them in your proposal. You're going to, your supporters, you want them on board before you submit your proposal. So again, where does all that information come from? It comes from the labor market assessment. So again, drill down, keep drilling down, and you may be going through this and you're going to find one or two people that are just saying, hey, if you could give people these certifications, I'll hire them. I'm interested. Or this program you're thinking of doing, I'm interested. Call me back or let me get involved or whatever. And once you get that, it's pretty much like this all most thing. Well, at first they weren't interested. We hire scientists and engineers. Well, then someone in that organization said, well, maybe we ought to do something for the community. Maybe we ought to have some special program. They knew who to contact, and they did that, and they started a whole new program. So this is where we're going with this labor market assessment, and we'll put some ideas and some websites that you may want to go to, in addition to, of course, what the RFP will look like. Don't just respond to the RFP, but again, think of this labor market assessment. And when you write your grant, this may not all be in that section, but you're going to realize that this is going to make the rest of your grant writing a lot easier in terms of developing advisory boards, committee, partnerships, placement strategies. You'll have that all in place. And again, I would say this takes a long time, and so start now. And again, with that caveat of this is in the future, but we're planning this. This is what we're doing. Or you may have a program going and you may want to enhance it. And all of our grantees have struggled with graduation. Well, a few haven't. In fact, a few that haven't had already lined up, like Rochester. They linked on to city contractors. And they said, okay, those of you doing remediation, deconstruction, are you interested in hiring our graduates? And, of course, they all were interested. So they had oversubscribed their graduate class before they even started. So not everybody has that good fortune, but some do. And that's really where you want to go. Any of you had some really good luck with doing something like this in the past? You know, those of you who are fortunate, if you're a community college or you're a WIB, you have a little bit of a head start because you already know some of these occupations. You know a lot of these companies. So you may know already who's hiring. Those of you who are brand new to this have got a lot more homework to do. I'm sure the employment services like Renique might have a easier job on doing something like this. But his charge is to dig down into the weeds and find out the actual people and contacts that he could be working with in those organizations. Anyone have some ideas on developing these labor market assessments?
I think I'm definitely going to look into it. You know, I'm going to get back with my share of this data that I got today with our director. We just recently did a need assessment for Southern Delaware. You know, it's a big need. We found, and I actually work with one of our DOL colleague of mine in the one-stop meetings here, and she helped me put together a needs assessment for the southern counties in Delaware. And come to find out, there's a big need, and they were very interested. They just wanted to see where, you know, what job placement looked like. You know, what type of jobs and the different how it varies. And like you mentioned before, how broad the title is. You know, they weren't. They wanted to be more specific in regards to the jobs and regards of, you know, because environmental technician is a very broad thing. So here, what I've been trying to do, I've been trying to get contacts with waste management companies as well as waste management itself. I've actually, like, you know, walked up actually to our local building here at the waste manager site, you know, spoke to somebody, just ringing the doorbell. You know, just like you mentioned, a lot of grassroots, you know, recruitment in a sense. But, I mean, I like to refer to those as front-end jobs. And we always know back-end jobs can just be at Amazon, you know, warehouse worker, forklift operator. We offer a forklift operator certification. So, I mean, but I just try to strive to, you know, for front-end placement. We recently, you know, being in Wilmington, we're 15, 20 minutes away from Philadelphia. Philadelphia is going through a bad situation with asbestos. So our individual from our last cohort, you know, during the cohort, he worked at Buffalo Wild Wings. He's a waiter. He's making $2.50. You know, after our graduation, we have like a ghost week where they come in and do job searching. And we also created a two-hour block during every day from Monday through Friday where they can come in and do job searching. He was one of those individuals. He had a plan. You know, a friend of his was in the class and told him about the class. And he was one of those guys, you know, he knew what he wanted to do. He had a plan. He did his own research. He was very engaged in class. He just actually, he brought me an offer letter a month ago and he started his job with the City of Philadelphia School District. He now makes $52,464 as an asbestos worker with the City of Philadelphia. But, yeah. I mean, he came, you know, he was ecstatic. But he got the information during the class. I helped him, you know, create, update his resume. You know, we do that here with even people from the past cohort. This is only my first year. So I actually told him to shoot for the job. You know, they actually asked for more, I think it was like 3 to 5 years experience, but I, you know, just told him to apply. Our guys graduate with 12 certifications in that five-week period that we run our cohort. We get 3 OSHAs, bloodborne pathogens, a forklift, as well as an asbestos worker. You know, we prepped him very well, like some of our other ones, in regards of preparing for the interview, even negotiating salary. And, I mean, there's such a big need in Philadelphia schools for asbestos. You know, he was blessed, you know. And, he went through their rigorous hiring process, and he started 2 weeks ago. You know,
What program are you in? What program
is this? This is Ronique.
This
is Ronique. I'm here in Wilmington, Delaware, West End Neighborhood House. So, you know, he's one of those individuals in regards of he was definitely a good product of the engagement that we gave him, his courage, and his he changed throughout the cohort. You know, he actually was an individual, introvert, you know, was very quiet in the class. But he graduated top of the class. He actually spoke at our graduation. You know, it ended up being a success story, you know. Graduated 17. He's one of the 10 that we currently have placed right now. And $2.50 working at Buffalo Wild Wings, and you're making $52,000.
Like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now, that's a shout-out. Now, that is a shout-out to an awesome grant program. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You know, we hear these stories, and they're serendipitous. He found out about that program, but that program could have gone poof, and some guy somewhere, where else could have gotten that job.
Yep.
That's cool. Where you get down to this needs assessment, how you have to get down in the weeds. You know, how did you find out that Philadelphia was looking for someone?
And that's what we talked about, and I spoke on this in California, engagement. I'm real, like, during those first 2 weeks when we do a social-emotional learning, we do a workforce readiness, I have a disciplinary background. I coach football, and my first goal was to create a community. you know, in a sense where I was able to redirect individuals and they will be able to engage me, engage themselves. So they learn me as well as I learn them. And I actually explained to them, you're not going to get any better, you know, because we get a lot of individuals, you know, with reentry population, individuals who have holes in their knowledge base like everyone else. But if you're repeating the things that you did in high school, or, you know, the 2 years you did in community college or a couple of weeks, whatever, and you sit there in at that desk and don't ask questions and you barely know what's going on, you're not going to be successful. So, I mean, we had to change the mindset. We had to get them to value the program. And I was really built on that. So he was able to engage our instructor. You know, he asked questions. And, I mean, the thing is, like I tell people, it was 17 people in the class. 16 other individuals were in the same room with him and had the same opportunities and had the same resources and got the same information. He was the one of the 17 that acted on it through his engagement. He stayed after. You know, he wasn't doing very well on the test in the beginning, but he stayed after. You're doing after classes. We created study groups because the individuals were struggling with the academic portion during the Haswapper test that we were giving. So we developed study groups, so he was the one that was most engaged. He understood it, and his value changed from the beginning. He actually, you know, he missed one day throughout that five-week period only because he ended up taking a test in New York for his asbestos certification before he graduated. So he got permission from myself and the instructor to go up there just so he could prepare and take that test. So he already had a certification in New York before he even graduated. Here in Delaware before he even graduated, you know, our program. And I think he was just tired of living the way he was living. I mean, when he came to me, when you reach individuals, I mean, certain individuals feel as though you gave them a gift. And I mean, you some people you got to push, some people you got to pull, some people you just speak it to them, you know. But I think throughout that 5 week period, he was able to put things in perspective in his life. And he was able to develop a plan and revise his plan and act to it after the fact. Like, I mean, even with our job searching during that period, you know, it was a simple thing. It was posted on Indeed, but they were just applying to a job on Indeed. Some of our people in the cohort didn't even upload their Indeed resume. They weren't properly doing job searching. So once you noticed that, you know, he was one of those individuals that got it. You know, he didn't seem like it was a burden. He paid attention. He was engaged. He locked in. And he benefited from it. And a conversation we had at one of those study sessions with the instructor, he told him about, you know, the need for asbestos workers in Philadelphia. You know, they're doing a big, you know, revamp up there with the school districts. So he's got full benefits. He's in a situation. He's in a union. You know, so with the city, he works for the city of Philadelphia, the school districts. That just kind of speaks for itself. From going from Buffalo Wild Wings as a waiter to being a union employee in the city of Philadelphia as a school district. You know, like he just went far left to far right.
Well, he owes it to you. He owes it to you in the program.
Yeah.
And you made his life.
Yeah. Yep.
That worth?
Yep. Exactly. And now, like I mentioned before, this is with the proper engagement, creating a community. I really believe no matter what we're teaching, if they're not properly engaged, if they don't value the opportunity, it just doesn't work. And I tell everyone, it's got to be more than getting a job. You may not get a job in a waste management site. You may not get a job doing these things, a front end or back end. You may do something else, but you should be a different individual. Not being perfect, but you should be a better individual coming out the program. You should see things different, and a lot of them did. You know,
yeah.
So I mean, that was that was a breath of fresh air. You know, when you're able to help individuals and change their mindset and outlook towards things. So I mean, you know, during this, I got a cohort start up at the March 16th. He's already referred three people. You know, we got three just off his referral. And actually, the recruitment process was different because it was just different. I mean, we talked about people failing drug tests. I only had two people fail, technically one. The other one person didn't even show up, so he might have had a change of heart, didn't want to do it. So we only had one fail. You know, so, I mean, compared to last time, I was going to bring in 20 people, and I had to scramble around and get the people that I got. Because typically before I got here, we only brought in 15. and before three or four drop off for whatever reason there was, but it was just totally around. I'm shooting for 20 right now. I'm currently at 18, so I got a couple more weeks. But it's all about bringing that right person in who's going to be able to accept, the message and receive the message.
And we're going to be talking about that later. But, you know, you got a good point. You could bring the jobs to them. You could do this great needs assessment, labor market assessment, and have all these jobs. If they're not motivated, you've wasted your time. Because you can try to get them in the door, and you can say, here's these opportunities, but they're going to have to take it up from there. And this individual did, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We hear these stories.
Yep. I think I sent something to Heather last week. Is Heather still on the line? Did you get that, Heather?
Hey, Renique, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, yep, I sent that last week. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're going to continue to move forward and do those things, and hopefully we can continue. I think we got a good thing going.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. And that's what this program is all about. It's all about that. And fantastic. And, you know, you're not going to hit 100%. This is difficult work.
Yeah.
Difficult work. And they're all going to make 52,000. But you don't.
Yeah, they're not.
You know,
they're
going to get in the door. And some will become instructors. We've had some become instructors. We've had some start their own businesses in California. We had the interesting thing was that some of them have trouble keeping their candidates to graduation because they've had some key courses, and we've had some that went into selling equipment, you know. So you never get to.
That's the issue we're trying to go through now. You know, we had some people come back from the past cohort. You know, we don't have the finances to do research, you know. So we have people in our grant that may have graduated in 18 and, you know, looking to do a research. You know, I mean, we're able to do refreshers, but they won't be able to get on just because they were in the same grant.
Right.
The grants, whatever. But,
right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Renique.
No problem. Thank you.
We love to hear that. Anyone? Well, we do try to do these 30 minutes, but sometimes it's just this stuff is too interesting to just stop the call. So, well, listen, we're going to continue in 2 weeks. So all of you, if you have any questions, send them to Heather or some success stories. Send them to Heather or some questions, and we'll try to do the best we can in responding to them. So you all have a good week with that, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, all right. Mike.